You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although Fox News' tagline is fair and balanced, most Americans recognize that the network does have a bias. But according to David Brock and Ari Robin-Haft of Media Matters for America, there's more involved to the network's approach than just some partisan reporting. In their new book, The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine, Brock and Robin-Haft investigate the consequences of Fox's flagrant support for the Republican Party and the problems they pose for the media and for democracy in general. It's published by Anchor Books, and it pleases me to welcome David Brock and Ari Robin-Haft to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
David, one of the people you've written about in this book, Andrew Breitbart, died shortly after midnight this morning of natural causes at 43, and a statement on his website said, "We have lost a husband, a father, a son, a brother, a dear friend, a patriot, and a happy warrior." The statement said, "Andrew lived boldly so that we more timid souls would dare to live freely and fully and fight for the fragile liberty that he showed us how to love." How would you characterize his role in American politics?
Well, I think on a day like this, basically what we want to say is thoughts and prayers are with his family. He obviously has come under a lot of criticism from Media Matters in the past. And if people want to see what that looks like, I mean, I would recommend that they either check out our website or look at the book, The Fox Effect.
Well, we may come to some of those stories later. Media Matters is your organization.
Yes.
Ari, you aren't the first people to use the term the Fox Effect, and it's considered by some to represent a psychological phenomenon. Can you explain when the phrase first came into use and what it means?
I don't know where the phrase came from. We kind of have been using it internally at Media Matters for a number of years to describe the number of effects Fox has had. So in the book, we identify what we call the Fox cycle, which is a cycle of smears, lies, and distortions, and how Fox attacks progressives. So, you know, it's a six-step cycle. Step one, a conservative creates a lie. Step two, Fox provides a huge amount of coverage to the lie. Step three, they start demanding other people provide coverage to the lie. Step four, other media picks up the lie. Step five, that media then complements Fox. Step six, the lie is debunked, but nobody covers the debunking and the damage is done. It's also an effect on our democracy. Fox has created an effect whereby they've swung the politics of the Republican Party so far to the right that we can't have a negotiation. They've, in fact, created almost two truths, so we can't talk to each other.
But they're the most watched of all the cable news networks, so people must find this interesting, or on some level, they find it something that they want to support.
There's no doubt that Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, is one of the most talented television producers of the 20th century. I think in the book, we're fairly complimentary of his talent. He has the ability to produce entertaining infotainment television. But in saying that, it's gotten ratings, but the damage that's done to our country is vast. And financial success does not equal moral success or ethical success.
Now, David, Ari used the word infotainment, which would suggest that Roger Ailes came out of advertising, but he didn't. You write about you begin with the trajectory of his career. Where did he get his start?
Well, he got his start in television, but very soon after that, hooked up with Richard Nixon. And his main career all through the years before going to CNBC and then to Fox had really been as a political advisor and operative. And one of the things that we point out in the book is, one, it's somewhat unusual that the head of a news network would have that background. Two, I think it's really interesting that even though he was in the political world, his ambition, even going back to the early 1970s, was to bring the GOP on TV.
In fact, he made a suggestion to Nixon's chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, that he wanted to do something like this. He said that He had an idea for a news dissemination organization that would avoid the censorship, the priorities, and the prejudices of network news.
Right. So this was very early on a play on this notion that the mainstream media had a liberal bias.
Well, what came of it at that time?
Well, so they did start something. They had a startup. It was funded by the Coors family, and it didn't work at that time. Later on, he was a producer of Rush Limbaugh's television show that was somewhat ill-fated as well. And then finally, he spectacularly succeeded once he had the Fox News platform.
Is that why Rupert Murdoch hired him, Ari?
Yeah, I think Rupert Murdoch hired him because he had a successful track record creating good TV. But at the same, at CNBC, he helped build that network. And he was a good target for hiring in terms of creating good TV. He also had very good GOP connections. I think we tell an interesting story in the book about when Fox News first launched, they weren't going to be on in New York City. But he had access to Rudy Giuliani and others because he had run Rudy Giuliani's mayoral campaign.
Time Warner didn't want to include them in their lineup.
Yes.
And Rudy Giuliani put a lot of pressure on Time Warner, which many people thought was only fair. Because Time Warner was showing an awful lot of other cable systems. Were they keeping them out because they saw this as a partisan cable news network?
I think in that story, I think, look, you can say they kept them out because Ted Turner was on the board of Time Warner and they were letting MSNBC on at the beginning. I think that's part of it. I think there's always been a rivalry between Ted Turner and Rupert Murdoch somewhat. I don't think it was political so much as it was a business decision.
Now, David, some Fox shows, like The Simpsons, are quite liberal. Does Murdoch see that as totally independent from what he does on his news network?
Yeah, I mean, obviously so. The Fox Broadcasting Network, I think, is a solely different animal, for sure. And some of the politics and values of some of those shows clearly are not in sync with the Fox News Channel. The Fox News Channel is a niche market. And as Ari was mentioning before, there is a market for people who really enjoy having their views, their ideas, and in some cases, their prejudices repeated back to them. And that's the niche they've successfully carved out for the cable audience.
Does it look different than it did when it started?
Yes, it does.
9/11 was a turning point for them, wasn't it?
9/11 was a turning point. The first turning point in their audience was really the face-off between Gore and Bush in the 2000 election with the disputed outcome. And then the second would be 9/11, where they positioned themselves as the patriotic network. This is where they put the flag on their chyron and were able to successfully exploit that moment. Now, in the last couple of years, what we've noticed and what most of this book tries to document is that the original Fox model, and we've been monitoring this for years, obviously, since we started Media Matters in 2004, was a kind of bringing conservative talk radio to television. In the book, we write that there was a more partisan political opportunity for Fox News after President Obama won. Roger Ailes declared the advent of the Obama administration to be the Alamo, and they really dug in, and we describe this in a lot of detail, building in capacities into the network that really don't exist in other media institutions and are more akin to what you would think of as the Republican National Committee and its role.
My guests are David Brock and Ari Robin-Huft. They have written a book called The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. It's published by Anchor Books. And when a president enters the White House, there's usually a little honeymoon period. That didn't happen with Barack Obama.
It absolutely didn't. Every day, you know, Glenn Beck's first day on air at Fox was the day before Barack Obama was inaugurated. And every day after he was inaugurated, and you can document this to the 100th day, Fox was just hitting him, calling him a socialist, saying his policies were socialist, going as far as comparing him to Hitler in those first 100 days. On the 17th day, it was kind of funny when one of their network hosts, Brett Baer, said, "Some may say the honeymoon is over." Well, you know, never really happened on Fox.
As soon as Obama entered office, Fox stopped discussing the Bush era almost entirely. Did they lay all of the problems he inherited from the Bush administration into Obama's lap?
I mean, that was the most amazing piece. The day after the election, you have Dick Morris on with Sean Hannity talking about how this recession And he is negative 3 months until he becomes president, but they were already calling it Obama's recession 3 months before he was inaugurated president, which is a pretty amazing – and that would be 6 months before any policy changes he could possibly have came into place. They were trying to give him ownership for it.
David, you mentioned that the original idea was to really do a televised version of talk radio. And one criticism of Fox is that it often does little or no original reporting. Don't they have a reporting staff?
They really, certainly in comparison to CNN, in comparison to MSNBC, which is able to draw on NBC, they really haven't put a lot of resources into their reporting staff. So they have not only in the evening, but through the day, a lot of opinionizing on the network. Now, they try to make a distinction that we, I think, prove in the book is largely false between their news side, their day side, and the evening host that we're all familiar with, O'Reilly, Hannity, et cetera. And we don't think that stands up to scrutiny.
Well, they argue that fair and balanced is they are balancing the unfair opinion, liberal biased approach of the networks. Do you see something comparable from CBS, ABC, and NBC?
No, I don't think so. What's interesting is they've changed a little bit the way they talk about fair and balanced more recently, and they've become a bit more brazen about it. The slogan fair and balanced obviously is phony and has been forever. It was a very clever branding technique, partly to convince, I think, their own audience and partly to convince advertisers that this is what they were doing. But lately, in Roger Ailes' statements, he has said, we've become the balance. Which means exactly what you're saying and what we say in the book, that they are the alternative to what they consider the liberal media. And people, I think, falsely make what we consider an apples and oranges comparison between MSNBC and Fox.
Ari, Fox is also criticized for which stories it chooses to cover and which ones it chooses to ignore. For example, things like the war on Christmas. Is this something that they all decide on in advance in the morning and then go after during the rest of the broadcast day?
I mean, we can see through our memos there's pressure on the network, on Voices of the Network to cover certain stories. So you see when Barack Obama went to Egypt and made a speech that was very well received across the political spectrum, Fox's managing editor Bill Simon said, in the 6,000 words, he didn't say the word terrorism. That became the headline across Fox. On the war on Christmas, there's a funny story that's not in the book because it came out after we published after the book was capped. But this December, Bill O'Reilly spent more than 40 minutes covering the war on Christmas on his show and spent 8 minutes covering actual wars. And if you want any balance to the network, I think that's a great statistic for where the network is.
So how does how do these kinds of choices and the use of certain jargon play into Fox's approach with things like the network's coverage of President Obama's health care reform bill?
Well, I mean, we saw the same thing. We have an email in the book from Bill Simon, again, the managing editor of the network, telling his staff, do not use the word public option, use government option on air. Now, you'd say, what's the difference? The difference is a few weeks before, Frank Luntz had written a polling memo saying, if you want to defeat the health care bill, call it the government option, not the public option. And we looked at what they were doing on air, and you see they were using public option interspersed with things like government option up until that point. The minute that email went out, policy changed. They went straight to government option. And this is not their opinion hosts. These are their news hosts like Brett Baer.
David, you also say that Fox's coverage of the Tea Party was significant because it changed how the group's message evolved.
Yeah, I think it not only changed how the message evolved, but what we show in the book is that Fox played a large role in fomenting the movement itself. And before the protests started happening in April 2009, Fox was out there beating the drums for a big turnout. I think the statistic is they did over 100 free promotional ads for the Tea Parties. They stationed their anchors and hosts around the country. And so what we see here developing is – a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, that they're beating the drums for the Tea Party, they're predicting this great turnout, and then they cover it and they force the rest of the press to cover it. And we saw a similar thing in the healthcare town halls in August of 2009, where they were actively encouraging the disruption of Democratic town halls. And then when they covered the events, they largely gave voice only to criticism, voices from citizens who were critical of the healthcare reform, and tended to censor out those who made comments that were supportive. And that, I think, furthered the Tea Party movement. I think that there's an irony in this, though, which is, you know, Karl Rove is affiliated with the Fox News Channel, and he and others have argued that in 2010, the Tea Party in some measure helped to damage some of the Senate prospects for pickup on the Republican side. And we see that in the current chaos in the Republican primaries, we also see this Tea Party phenomenon playing out. And so while Roger Ailes, we give him credit for great production values and being that talented producer, it raises a question, I think, about how brilliant a political strategist he may be.
My guests are David Brock and Ari Robin Haft, who, along with Media Matters, I put together a book called The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. It is published by Anchor Books, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with David Brock, the founder and chairman of Media Matters. He is the author of five books, including The Republican Noise Machine, Right-Wing Media, and How It Corrupts Democracy. He wrote the best-selling book, Blinded by the Right, The Conscience of an Ex-Conservative. And also here is Robin Haft, Media Matters Executive Vice President. Can you tell us a bit about Media Matters and what you do when you're not writing books like The Fox Effect?
Sure. So I founded Media Matters in 2004, mid-year. And basically, we were constituted to analyze and correct conservative misinformation in the media. And we were trying to solve two problems that were related. One was the rise of explicitly right-wing media in this country. And we all know what that is. Publications like The Washington Times, almost all of talk radio, and obviously the Fox News Channel. And those media entities were operating with total impunity and with zero accountability until we came along. And so our strategy there was to shine a light on what goes on in this right-wing media.
Did you have some insight because you had been part of their right-wing media for years?
Oh, absolutely. I had wanting to take some good, I suppose, out of the bad. I had participated in a number of things that I recount in Blinded by the Right that I'm not especially proud of, that were exercises in conservative propaganda. And so I think I did have some insight. I think that I was able to identify a problem pretty sharply, that nobody really on the progressive side in an institutional context was addressing. And then secondly, I was not only familiar with the right-wing media, but I was familiar with the arguments often made against the mainstream media. And I was very familiar with the fact that there are right-wing organizations going all the way back to 1969, organizations like Accuracy in Media, that were constituted to pressure the media from the right under this notion of liberal bias. And what was happening was, as a result of that, too much of the mainstream media was accommodating that criticism. And so a second thing that we do is balance out that criticism. We give people an ability to voice their concerns about the media directly into these media institutions.
I was reminded about the campaign against Anita Hill when I saw this latest thing from Rush Limbaugh. He's called the woman who was denied the right to speak at a controversial contraception hearing a slut.
Right.
Is that a standard approach to people who are disagreed with?
Sure, I think so. I mean, I used a version of that term myself.
Anita Hill was a bit nutty and
a bit
slutty.
Right, in an article in the American Spectator back in 1991 or early 1992. And so, yes, I mean, we pick up all the time in conservative media. We monitor it for hate speech, and sexism is a form of that, and I think that you find that particularly on the Limbaugh show.
Ari, you mentioned the Fox coverage of town hall meetings. They got quite rowdy. Participants often asked outrageous questions like whether Democratic Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts supported Nazi policy. And Nazi is another word that we hear a lot on Fox.
Well, what was interesting were two pieces of that. Fox, the coverage of that question on Fox was criticizing Barney Frank for responding not so nicely to a woman who asked him, a Jewish member of Congress, do you support Nazi, that accusing him of supporting Nazi policies. I think this is something you saw with Glenn Beck, and I think we tell a really interesting story in the book.
He's called George Soros a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah, and we tell a really interesting story in the book where he called the head of a Jewish philanthropic organization. He claimed that his words were exactly what Nazis used and what created the Holocaust to the head of a Jewish philanthropic organization. A group of rabbis wrote and other prominent Jewish Americans wrote a letter to Rupert Murdoch asking him to tone it down. Roger Ailes responded and said, no, I think Glenn Beck was right. And I think it's an interesting interaction where you see Roger Ailes and the network executives were actually ideologically in line with their most radical host.
Has Fox yet addressed this politician in Illinois who has called the Holocaust a big lie?
I don't think they've addressed
this. He's running
this,
as a Republican candidate.
Who was, I believe, some former Nazi party affiliation. I don't think they've addressed it yet. I've been traveling this morning, so obviously I can't be sure up to the minute.
Now, Fox encouraged constituents to contact members of Congress to express opposition to issues like health care reform. That's going way beyond being I always thought that the goal in American news broadcasting was at least some kind of a semblance of objectivity.
Right. So this is one of the capacities that I was referring to earlier that have been built in these last few years under the Obama administration into the Fox News network. And one of the aspects of a political operation is mobilization. And so we talked about mobilizing the Tea Party. We talked about mobilizing the protests against health care. You also have a form of lobbying. You had Glenn Beck encouraging the audience to oppose certain Obama nominees to take positions on various issues. And so what they've been able to do is mobilize a kind of conservative grassroots constituency to partisan political ends, and that's quite new.
Now, whenever this comes up, people point out that MSNBC has Rachel Maddow and has had other people who have taken very strong positions analogous to Glenn Beck.
Sure. Well, I don't think analogous to Glenn Beck, and we can get into Glenn Beck if you'd like. We have a lot to say about Glenn Beck, but let me just address the MSNBC question. A couple things. One, The corruption of the news side of Fox is, and Ari already talked about the internal memos that we have, is a big part of this book. We certainly—
You give us some of those memos. How did you get them?
Well, they were leaked out of Fox News to one of our Media Matters folks. I think they're very revealing of the way that a party line is put down by the news chief to the news staff. And that kind of thing we do not see at MSNBC. We don't see it in their news coverage. As far as folks like Rachel Maddow, I think a couple things. One, we don't argue with Bill O'Reilly's opinions or Sean Hannity's opinions. But the cliche, obviously, is that you can have your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And that informs our monitoring of these shows. And so the night after night intentional misinforming that we see from folks like Sean Hannity is certainly not going on in MSNBC. And we've also seen these MSNBC hosts, you know, everybody makes a mistake. We've seen them, when they do that, correct themselves. And that's really what we ask of Fox. And it's a rare day when we actually are able to achieve that result.
And one more point on top of that. When an MSNBC host, and there have been several instances, has made a political contribution, it's been outed, they've been suspended, and it's been multiple hosts of the network. Sean Hannity has openly contributed to, for example, Michelle Bachmann's political action committee. You have hosts on Fox going to fundraisers and being labeled at the fundraiser as on the host committee as Fox News host and then fill in the name. That is far – now, people – commentators at other networks do fundraising for political events. They don't get listed under their network titles. Fox permits itself to be used as a political vehicle that way.
Now, a listener does ask, can journalism ever be unbiased, and should it be?
I think in the first chapter of the book, we're pretty clear about this. Bias isn't the problem with Fox. bias, and your listener's right, bias is it's hard to make a person unbiased. We all have biases. The problem with Fox is it's become a political machine. It's, you know, bias is also okay. We're biased. We acknowledge we're progressives. Fox claims to be fair and balanced, which is misleading its viewers. And it's raising money for Republicans, and we document tens of millions of dollars in contributions in the book. It is mobilizing supporters through the Tea Party and through other methods on air. And it's their message machine, as we note, taking talking points directly from the Republican National Committee and putting them on television, so much so that the same typos that were in the GOP press release were in their on-screen graphics.
There were violent attacks that have been associated with people like Glenn Beck. He made remarks and people acted accordingly. Has Fox responded to that?
Well, they ultimately—
I mean, they did get rid of
Glenn
Beck.
They ultimately did.
But that's because they couldn't get—because advertisers were pulling their ads, not because they objected to what he was doing.
I think that's right. And, you know, I think for us, Glenn Beck was a uniquely dangerous figure because there are troubled folks out there in the country who were taking what was on that show at face value. And we walked through a number of incidents, but just to quickly give you a couple of them, Senator Patty Murray had a death threat against her after she voted for the healthcare bill, and the perpetrator was tried and convicted in the sentencing phase. A relative wrote for leniency and describes in what I think is kind of chilling detail how this fellow was inculcated into Glenn Beck's worldview.
Are hosts saying things today that they might not have been able to get away with in the past?
Yeah, Glenn Beck has talked on his show a lot about shifting the Overton window, meaning the kind of range of policy debate. Fox has kind of shifted the window of acceptable speech. You know,
but we were hearing outrageous things from Ann Coulter a long time ago.
Right.
I mean, she said that we should invade the Middle East and Christianize everybody. She said that Al-Qaeda should have bombed the New York Times building rather than the Twin Towers.
I mean, there have always been people saying insane things in different places. There's been rarely a time where those people are employed by the highest rated cable news network in the country. There have been kind of, you know, you can stand on a street corner on a soapbox and say whatever you want and nobody can fire you. And, you know, Ann Coulter's always been her own kind of vehicle, meaning she's, you know, she writes her book, she does her column, she kind of exists in her own media space. Fox is part of one of the largest publicly traded media corporations in the world. I think the lines increase with each step, and Fox clearly doesn't care.
I also think that one of the things we are able to establish in the book in terms of Glenn Beck is that he had the backing of Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes recruited him to the network. And when Beck got in trouble, particularly over the misuse of Holocaust and his use of Nazi imagery, we have a document in the book where Roger Ailes backs up Glenn Beck. And, of course, Roger Ailes has attacked NPR itself as the left wing of Nazism. And so one of the things that's different here is Ann Coulter being a kind of free agent, here having the full force of the Fox News network behind Glenn Beck until, as you said, it became unprofitable.
But we mentioned Andrew Breitbart earlier. He was a free agent. At the same time, some of the things that he put onto his website wound up being picked up by Fox, weren't they? Like the whole business about ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now.
And I think this is what's interesting about Fox.
He did an edited version of something, and that's what Fox pushed.
But I think this is what's interesting. This actually makes an interesting point about Fox is we've never seen them as the source of the conservative lie. They're more the laundromat of the lie, and they take in all these conservative lies and push them out to their huge audience, which is why the Fox cycle begins with conservatives start to spread a lie. Then Fox picks up the lie and gives it outrageous coverage.
So that's what they did with ACORN?
Yeah. In the first 24 hours of the James O'Keefe video, they ran more than a dozen segments. And that's what they do. They put that kind of pressure on organizations.
On the other hand, you also reveal that early on, Bill Salmon looked for racial subtext in Barack Obama's writings, including his memoir, Dreams from My Father. They were looking to make a point from the start, weren't they?
Sure, absolutely. Well, one of the things, not only Bill Salmon, but to go back to Roger Ailes' history for a moment, is in his political realm, he was very skilled at exploiting race. And this is something that the Fox News Channel continues to do. The most interesting story I think we have about Bill Salmon, who is their Washington news chief in the story, in the book, is a story about a fundraising, his appearance at a fundraiser on a cruise well after the 2008 election, where he tells the story to the assembled crowd of how it became to be that Barack Obama was labeled a socialist on the Fox News Channel. And in the course of his conversation after the fact, he lets on to the audience that he was creating, quote, political mischief, and that he himself had deep skepticism about the claim that Obama was a socialist. And yet he went on the air. He did it himself. And after he did it, we documented a number of times where this became a major talking point on the Fox air. And socialism was part of a whole, not only race, the birther issue, where they've tried to make Obama a kind of other, not American.
A man who's born in Kenya.
That's right.
But can you talk about Fox's coverage of climate change?
Sure. You know, Fox has been one of the key kind of climate denial news outlets, from exploiting the kind of out of context emails from scientists that were leaked as part of the ClimateGate fiasco, to there's one scene I'll always remember on Fox, where the host was literally running his SUV outside the studio to create more pollution. I mean, that's how ridiculous it's gotten. And we show in the book that at one point they basically cropped Al Gore's testimony to make it seem as though he had profited from his work on climate when he was saying the exact opposite. We show another email from Bill Salmon ordering people on how to talk about climate on air. So they've been – in terms of – there's a real problem in our debate when two sides can't – we can't deal with climate because one side says the earth is warming. We need to do something about it. The other side says – the earth isn't warming.
But you said that Bill Salmon admitted that he didn't really believe Barack Obama was a socialist.
Yep.
Do Fox News reporters and hosts actually believe that climate change is a hoax?
I mean, I can't get inside their heads, right? I don't know what some of them believe. I've been told by a former Fox reporter that, a former Fox reporter told me that, like, Brett Baer, for example, is a company man, and he doesn't necessarily believe some of the things he does, but he does it because he's got a nice cushy job at Fox.
We can't know, but what we have in their own words is we have a top Fox executive quoted that the network is the voice of the opposition, so folks don't need to take our word for that. And then another former executive talking about the time during the Bush administration and the role Fox played called the network a Stalin-esque mouthpiece.
Does the Fox audience grow when there's an especially explosive story on the air, like the one that accused Barack Obama of spending 2 years at a Muslim school?
I think they grow when their growth has come at kind of partisan political moments where the right wants to be reassured of their worldview. So, you know, they grew during the healthcare debate. And just as CNN kind of sees a spike in audience when a major news event happens and people want to tune in to see it live, Fox is when the right wing needs to be reassured of their worldview. That's when their audience spikes.
But can we also say that in a country of 300 million people, if you get an audience of 50 million people, you are a huge media outlet. At the same time, you only represent a small portion of the total population.
And Fox's audience is far smaller than that.
Yes,
overall.
I think so. I mean, but the way we look at this, and to go back to kind of the beginning of the interview and the Fox effect, Fox has a bigger effect than just reaching its own audience in at least a couple of different ways that are somewhat hard to measure. But one of the ways media critics originally used the term Fox effect was to talk about how a false and wrong or flawed story on Fox could spill over into the mainstream press. And we've seen that phenomenon. I think we see it less recently, as the rest of the media becomes more and more aware of what Fox is. But that's a way of infecting and creating a kind of conventional wisdom that you can see throughout the media. And then the other issue is again, more informally, but for every Fox viewer, there's what I call the water cooler effect, that they're bringing Fox propaganda to their friends. They repeat these talking points. And so it gets out there and it helps form conventional wisdom.
Hasn't Tucker Carlson of the Daily Caller suggested that you coordinated with the White House on this project, this book?
Well, we didn't coordinate with the White House on this book, if that's the question. I mean, I think conservatives make a lot of suggestions about our work. I think our work stands on its own. You can check the footnotes. You can check the facts. It's all in there.
But that's a way of suggesting that you're just as biased as you're saying they are.
Well, you know, I made a conscious decision when we started Media Matters. We are a progressive organization, and the conscious decision was to say so. And so when we are out there, when we're interviewed, we're not hiding from the fact that we're openly progressive. And, you know, our bias comes in how we choose to cover what we cover. We're looking for conservative misinformation. But I would challenge folks to see a bias in the actual product. This is a very fact-filled website that people are free to visit, MediaMatters.org. And so I think that one of the things we ask of Fox is stop flying under the false flag of fair and balanced in journalism and come out and say exactly what is going on here.
And the book we've been talking about is The Fox Effect, How Roger Ailes Turned a Network into a Propaganda Machine. It is published by Anchor Books. And my great thanks to David Brock and Ari Robin-Hoft for being on our show today to talk about it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.